All right, you guys. Sorry about that. Nice intro. Completely me just, like, trying to figure out what the fuck's going on. Okay, you guys. Well, this is Tara Sanders, and this is the Horse Trader's Diary, and I have Aspen with me.
Hey, guys.
So, anyway, nice intro. Nice intro. Yes.
Love it.
Love it. Love it. No, literally, I had to... Tinley has my phone, and I had to download Anchor on her phone. And yeah, I was like, what am I doing? I had to enable the mic, all kinds of stuff. And I was in the middle of doing that when the freaking thing started recording. Okay, you guys, so today we have a question and an answer. I have lots and lots of questions that came from a live video we did on Facebook Live. So if you guys don't watch our Facebook Live videos, you should. They're good. Now, what do we got? Give me a question.
Start answering.
Okay. Let's start answering.
What is your favorite hoof dressing conditioner for preventing dry hoofs and cracks?
So, a couple of things on this. I have a couple things. I do think that hoof conditioner isn't a bad idea. Mostly because if you have cracked hooves, you probably have bacteria in the cracks. And I think it's important to buy an antimicrobial hoof dressing that can kill the bacteria that gets in those cracks. But I think that the biggest thing with hoof conditioning is nutrition. You have to remember that if what's growing out of the body is not in good condition and not good quality hoof, that's what breaks off. So first I like to start with nutrition. I have two products that anytime I have a horse with really brittle hooves, I will, one, start them on OE Align because it's got a lot of biotin in it. Then OE has a product for hoofs that is fantastic. This is another thing, though. What you have to remember is that from the coronary band to the toe, that's about a year's worth of growth. So for you to genuinely see major difference in horse's feet through supplementation, you have to feed it 6 months. 6 months. You can't feed it for 30 days and see a difference in any supplement that tells you, see results in 30 days. They're just banking on people that spend money and want to believe in their products so desperately that they're like, I see a difference. I really do. I think that some products can maybe help the foot grow a little bit faster. I know the OE Align really helps my horse's mane tails and feet grow a little faster. But listen to me when I tell you, you have to feed a product like that. I mean, you can see some superficial results, like maybe some dapples or get a little slicker haired. But to really see results like mane, tail, feet, it has to be fed about 90 days to six months. But for those of you who are like, okay, Tara, but what do we do right now? What do we do right now while we're waiting for that 6 months? Like, my horse currently has brittle feet. And I'm needing something now. I'm needing something to condition the hoof that's already not good quality. Yes, hoof oils will help with that, just like your fingernails. You can kind of put something on them just to help them not break as much. Rainmaker is okay. I'm a big pine tar fan, so I still like pine tar. I think that if you can buy reducing or pine tar, I think you can do as much good with those products as anything else. They just stink. And they're kind of goopy. But I like reducing. I like pine tar. There's a lot of products like that. And what they're going to do is they're not only going to really drive moisture into the hoof, they are also going to kill bacteria. And they're just going to kind of create a barrier between the foot and the outside world so that more shit doesn't get in there. So I say short-term solution. Pine tar reducing is my favorite product. Now, with reducing, you don't paint it around the coronary band. You do it an inch to an inch and a half from the coronary band so that you don't get that reducing on the you don't want to get it on the hairline.
Oh, yes,
because it'll scurf the skin. So I always buy like a wooden brush, like a wooden toothbrush to like really paint it in there. So I'm a big fan of reducing. I'm a big fan of any pine tar product that you can buy. I don't necessarily love hoof paints. I think that if you can find a good like antimicrobial one that can kind of get that liquid down in the cracks and crevice, that that's a good idea. But for me, it's all nutrition based. So I'm going to say, if you have a horse with super bad feet, one, go ahead and get you some pine tar, get that stuff slathered on there, and then start a better nutritional program. I would add in OE Align. If your horse has serious feet problems, I would do OE Align and add in their OE hoof supplement. If you need those, we can get them ordered for you, free shipping. You can go to their website and order them. It's oenutraceuticals.com. But if you contact Aspen to order, we can get you free shipping. I wish I had a discount code, but the only thing I can offer you is free shipping. Now, let's fast forward. And let's talk about something a little bit, you know, more in depth with hooves. If you have thrush problems, which lots and lots of people do have thrush problems, you have to treat that thrush and kill that thrush before anything will change with your horse's hooves. Because what I found is if you have a really bad thrush and fungal and bacterial problem in the hoof, no matter what you feed, no matter what you do, that is going to stay above and keep the hoof, the frog especially, eaten out. And the frog is instrumental in the horse's blood flow because the frog is what pumps the blood back up the leg. So if you pick your horse's foot up and it doesn't have a good pronounced prominent frog in the bottom of its foot, that horse is going to have lower limb circulation issues. And I see some navicular horses that don't have good frog, and I think to myself, that might be why. It's just something I've noticed with hundreds and hundreds of horses coming through. So you want to make sure that your horse has good sole, good frog. So now you're like, well, Tara, my horse doesn't have a good frog, and I have thrush. What the fuck? Go online and type in tomorrow's mastitis medicine. It cannot be today's. It has to be tomorrow's, which is dry cow formula. It's more potent. You want to order boxes of tomorrow's mastitis medicine. It comes in single dose syringes. I think there's 12 to a pack. And you want to shoot that medication in every crack and crevice. The needle tip on it is plastic rubber. So don't worry. You can't hurt anything. You're not going to stick it in so far that you damage anything, but it's got a little rubber tip on the end that looks like a needle. You want to stick that tomorrow's mastitis medicine in every crack, every crevice, all around the frog, and you want to do that at least every other day for all 12 of those. And I tell people, I see people that start doing it, they'll do it for 5 syringes, it starts to get better, the smell goes away, and they're like, hell yeah. They stop doing it and it comes right back. You have to be very aggressive with thrush, and I'm telling you, 1 syringe a day, every other day, for all 12 of those syringes. It might be 15. Regardless, you want to use all of them. Even past the point that you think the thrush is killed. So, one, make sure that you kill all the thrush in the foot. Then you can use reducing and pine tar over the top of the tomorrow's mastitis medicine. So you don't use one instead of the other. I normally do 5 syringes of the tomorrow's mastitis medicine, and then on the 6th syringe I start doing pine tar over the top of it. And then once I stop with the tomorrow's mastitis medicine, by then normally you can stop with the pine tar. I always just keep pine tar and reducing on hand just for emergencies. But nutrition. So no foot, no horse. There's a lot to feet. The reason that I've learned to just kind of throw the kitchen sink at feet, which means I start with tomorrow's mastitis medicine, then I go ahead and start using the reducing, is because I want to do the pre-existing hoof and get it healthy so that the new hoof that's growing down is not compromised immediately with a fungus infection. So somebody told me once, it's about like having fungus on the skin. Even though your skin sheds, a new skin comes in. If you have a fungus there, the new skin that comes in is immediately damaged. So we've got to get rid of the bacteria. We've got to get rid of the foot fungus. We have to actually get the hoof in healthy condition, then start to supplement nutritionally to make that foot grow faster, to grow healthier. And then all of a sudden you'll notice in like 6 months that your horse has badass feet and it can be barefoot. And you're like, I never thought this could happen. Well, that's how you get it to happen. You have to start at point one and go down the steps. But tomorrow's mastitis medicine, reducing, is a fantastic, fantastic product. And then OE Nutraceuticals is great, not only for feet, it's great for, well, everything. I love OE Align. OE Align is it for me. So, next question. Would you like to add anything to that?
No.
Okay. Next question.
What horses does Tinley have, and does Aspen have a horse?
Okay, yes and yes. So, Aspen, you want to tell them about... Aspen has a gray horse named Vegas.
Yes, his name is Vegas. He is, what is he, 12?
Yep, he's 12. He's an Oklahoma 12. Fuel.
Yep.
And a really great customer of mine had him, and she bought him, and he was her barrel horse. Kind of a high-end barrel horse, but he's got a couple of quirks, and she felt like he was going to be better suited in someone else's program. Her and I worked out something. She brought him to me, and I gifted him to Aspen so that Aspen has a finished barrel horse.
Yes.
Are you excited?
Oh, I'm so excited. I finally get him back from Corbin this weekend, and this weekend I am just getting on him and going to a barrel race.
Yeah. So. We sent him over to Corbin's just to let him get a little bit of air in him while we were gone and to get him kind of tuned up, and he's made some beautiful passes through on him. Really kind of a nice horse. So Tinley has a couple of horses. She's got a pony named Cole. She has a donkey named Campancho.
A horse named Peyote.
She's got a big horse named Peyote. And she has...
the happy pony.
Well, I don't know that we're going to keep him. We have Johnny. And if we end up keeping him for her to be her barrel pony, that will be great. And if we don't, that's okay. But the horses that are never leaving are Cookie Monster and Peyote, Campancho and Cole. Those are her four. So we have a donkey, we have a mini pony, we have a good kid's horse named Cookie Monster, and then we have a really great horse that was a finished cutter, and his name is Peyote. And then Aspen has Vegas. What else?
How do you build up a top line?
So there's a fine line there. Protein and exercise. I see a lot of people say that alfalfa is a great thing to supplement into a diet. And really, honestly, it's not even the alfalfa that's the thing. Alfalfa normally is super high in protein. I think if your horse is lacking in the top line, part of that is nutritional and part of that is the amount of exercise that they're getting. I always worm a horse that has a low top line really, really good. I'll even run the herbal dewormer through them, the EPM super dewormer through them, just because I find that it makes their body start to utilize the nutrition you give them properly. But my biggest thing with top lines is protein. So if I have a horse that's hard to keep a top line, like a big, flashy, good top line, I feed a 14% protein feed. People think that that feed will make them hot, and that's not the case at all. Protein turns into muscle. Horses absolutely have to have high quantities of protein to build muscle. So if you're having top line issues, a 14% protein feed, alfalfa is great. The thing I don't like about alfalfa is I feel like it's a leading cause of bone issues because people feed straight alfalfa and don't supplement the proper minerals to balance it. If you want to feed alfalfa in addition to grain, which is already a balanced nutritional product, that's okay, but straight alfalfa is a big no to me. I think there's a place for alfalfa in horses' diets. I do not think free choice alfalfa or straight alfalfa with no grain is a good diet. I think you're doing a lot of long-term damage you don't realize you're doing because you're not measuring the horse's bone density on a regular basis, because that's not affordable for any human to do. It's very, very expensive to do that. But we did some studies and found that most navicular horses at some point in their life were fed a straight alfalfa diet, or they, you know, didn't have good quality feet underneath them and didn't have a frog to push the blood back up. So anyway, I was part of a study that was studying navicular and navicular syndrome, and they did thousands of horses, and we had taken horses up that came to the kill pen that were navicular, and they tried to sort out the navicular, fix it, and bring it back. And anyway, I have a theory on navicular, and I think if you could control a horse's diet and control them from the time they were babies up, you could prevent navicular by always making sure they have a great frog underneath them so there's lots of good blood circulation, and by feeding a very balanced mineral diet that has enough phosphorus. But that's a whole other podcast, that's a whole other topic, that's a whole other thing. But top line, protein.
Well, and a lot of what you just explained, there's another question: what is the best way to fatten muscle up a horse? a lot of what you just explained, Will.
Yes. So fattening up a horse and... So the problem with fattening up a horse and putting muscle on a horse are very different, and they're not the same. And a lot of people think that a big fat horse looks great, which they do. But muscle and fat are different. Protein. I always feed a 14% sweet feed, period. I do love to supplement alfalfa in the diet of horses. But here's the deal. Refeeding skinny horses is a completely different thing than fattening a horse up. So I'm trying to figure out, is it like, I mean, that would be my question. Are you just fattening up a horse that's a little poor, or are you having to refeed a horse?
Yeah.
So anyway, I personally, in my feed program, we feed a Purina feed called Racetrack Impact. We also have Race Ready, depending on the horse. The needs there are more of a, if a horse is a kind of an easier doer and they stay really healthy on just Racetrack Impact, 14% with OE Align, I leave them on that. If they kind of don't dapple out and they don't really slick off, like slick as freaking glass, with that, I'll go to a product called Race Ready because it's got a lot more amino acid in it. Race Ready is a little more expensive, but I can do Race Ready in OE Align, and I can put dapples and a shine on a horse in 2 weeks that other people can't get, and I love that combination. I feed a hay that has been tested that Mr. Bill grows specifically at his property, and it is a great coastal. But we do have horses that we supplement in some alfalfa. If I feel like when we get to working them or exercising them, I can see a little bit of rib. Or if I feel like they're not putting on enough weight around their SI and the top of their croup, which is where their backbone kind of meets their pelvis and their psoas and all of that wraps around. If they're not putting on a ton of weight in that area, I'll start to supplement alfalfa in on those horses. Refeeding horses is a completely different deal.
She's talking.
What is she needing? Tinley, I can't hear you, baby. I have headphones in.
Nothing. Just out of service.
She's out of service. Yeah. So her phone's not working.
Yes.
So I feel like refeeding horses is a completely different topic. The main thing I can tell you about refeeding horses is that you have to start with alfalfa. And I will start with just one flake of alfalfa 2 times a day. And then I will make a little bit of a mash. And I put 1 cup of chia seeds and 1 cup of OE Align. And I put 2 cups of aloe vera juice and kind of make it a sloppy soupy thing. Because sometimes horses that are real thin don't have good teeth, and we don't know yet. So the reason I want to do the chia seeds and I want to do the OE Align is because I'm going to start adding some minerals and some vitamins in with the OE Align. Also a little fiber. But the chia seeds are going to help the gut stay moist, so that if they have a lot of parasite problems, things like that, it'll keep their gut slick, for lack of better words, so that you don't get colic and impaction. If you have a horse that has kind of colic symptoms, you can feed up to 2 cups of chia seeds a day, and that really helps GI issues. It helps to kind of push some of that stomach acid through their body, because the chia seeds hit the esophagus and expand and become kind of a moist little ball of... Have you ever put chia seeds in your mouth?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they like blow up and get slimy. They do the same thing in the GI tract. I also really feed 2 cups. So the first time I worm a horse that we've refed, you know, like it's been emaciated, it's really wormy, I'm super worried that when I worm it, it's got a worm overload, maybe it's going to colic. I will give 2 cups of chia seeds in the morning and 2 cups of chia seeds at night, and I'll worm midday. So like 2 cups of chia seeds that morning, worm the horse, and then do 2 cups of chia seeds at dinner. So 4 total cups of chia seeds that day, because I find that the chia really helps the wormer push the worm load out. And I might do 2 cups of chia seeds twice a day for a couple of days to follow a wormer on a horse. We had to do that with Bliss because she was so infested with worms that we were scared to worm her. She had worms in her feces when she would poop. Like, you knew she was wormy. So we just really totally upped her. We totally upped her chia seed intake around worming. So what else? What's next? And if you're having trouble keeping weight on a horse, of course, do the 5 basics, which are check their teeth, make sure they're wormed, up their protein, make sure they don't have ulcers. You know, that's the things I do. Like, if a horse isn't keeping weight on, It's worms, teeth, ulcers, add protein, and then just overall add exercise. And the reason that's a thing is because some horses will get kind of a hay belly and then lose their top line and kind of look ribby because they're not getting enough exercise to make their body break down lactic acid in the muscles enough to build those muscles up, which is a whole other podcast and topic.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Will you compile a video with all your teachings and sharings? You have a wealth of knowledge that would be great for all of us.
I have.
That would be a, like, 60 million day long video.
It would. I have lived, eat, breathed, done horse since I was a toddler. It's all I know. And I took everything I ever learned in, and I learned something new every day. So I will continue to do live videos. I will continue to share what I know on Facebook the best that I can. And I do this podcast. And if you ever have questions, you can just ask. But to just try to sit down and put everything in one place, I don't have time to do that. But I will still share, and you'll just have to pay attention and follow along and watch, because I feel like the other day somebody sent me a video and they're like, I was listening to you ramble and all of a sudden you got off on the topic of like gastric ulcers. And she was like, I learned so much in the middle of your rant. And I was like, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I should have made that its own video. What, baby? Do I like pie? Yes.
Okay. How many horses can your facility hold?
250? No, I could probably. I mean, so I have 30 pins total, and the back four pins could hold 10 to 15 a piece, easy. I mean, feedlot style or just like one, you know, one horse per place.
Style.
300.
Yeah.
I can hold 300 horses without being, like, too crowded.
Yeah. Would you ever do 30-day tune-ups for horses?
I would not, no. There's not enough money in the world to make me do that. I do it on my own because I own them and that's our living. So, yeah, I mean, and I tune up Aspen all the time. I mean, I tune on her and kind of, you know, teach her about bits and keep her mind fresh. But I don't have the want to tune up other people's horses, and I don't have the want to, like, I mean, if you charge $1,000 a month to tune up people's horses, the most that you probably could do would be about 10 to do it correctly, because a lot of horses need to be rode twice a day for at least a week or two before it really sets in. And that's only $10,000 a month, and I couldn't operate my facility, my staff, and what I have going on that. So that's the problem, is what I have going on just cost more money than what I could make tuning up people's horses.
Well, and then the time on top of...
Yeah, because it would take all my time.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if I were to take in 10 outside horses to tune up and do a great job, that would be a full plate of work. Anybody that's got more than 10 horses in training, there's no way they're doing them justice. And if they are, it's because they've hired out part of that. And then either you're underpaying somebody or you're delegating responsibility off to someone else, and that's coming out of your pocket. And if you're paying them adequately what they probably deserve, the profit margin is just not, there's just not enough profit in being a horse trainer. No, not at all. I would never. And I'm not, listen, there are people out there that, like Corbin, for instance, he's a fantastic trainer. I think he has 10. We've had this discussion. I think, I want to say he told me he had 10. And with what he charges and the way he does it, you know, he's making profit and he's comfortable, because you have to remember, at like $1,000 a month, that's $10,000 a month. And you're like, hey, that's $120,000 a year. But then you start stall rent,
feed, water bill,
electric, hay bill, having to hire somebody to come in to help you saddle, clean stalls. That's, you know, that's a chunk of money every month. So let's say you make $10,000. Just paying somebody is $2,000 a month. If you pay $500 a week for somebody to clean all your stalls, which I feel like is an adequate paycheck, to clean all your stalls and tack all your horses so that when you're riding, you can do a good job. So that's right there, $2,000. So now you're only making $8,000, and then you pay your stall rent. You know, I mean, if you do it by yourself and do it correctly, you can make money. But I unfortunately spend too much time when I get on them to do it by myself. because I can pick and lope and do turn. Like, I like a horse to have a solid turnaround and not be rushed in their turnarounds. And anyway, long story short, no. Long story short, the answer is no. Tara will never train horses for a living again. I would rather smash my finger in a door or step on a Lego.
What horses do you personally own? What do you look for when adding a horse to your herd? And what goals do you have for your horses in the upcoming year?
So I personally own lots of horses. I would say that if, you know...
Just pick three. Three personal horses.
Well, I can do better, but I'm just telling you guys, like... So my personal... I have a mare that I rodeo on named Sister. Her registered name is I'm a Sparkin' Rocket. I really love her. She's a Zampardeck mare out of a racebred mare on bottom. Super solid mare. I really love her, and I've kept her because I just have a lot of respect for her. She's kind of one of those horses that came from like a $1,500 nothing background to just kind of being the, you know, the gun at the gun show when you need her. I have a play gun first down dash mare named Petra that I absolutely love. She's 6 this year, and she's been fantastic. And I have Tequila, which is signed with the best. She's a Best Credit Me Sunfrost that we got from Judd's. Well, she came from Judd's program. I have those three horses that are like my finished barrel horses. I have a Brookstone Bay daughter. I have a French Streak to Vegas daughter that I'm breeding now because I don't have time to go as much, so I don't need 5 barrel horses. I have a mare that's been to the NFR that's now going to be a brood mare. She's a Tiger War Leo on top and a Montando, which is Dash for Cash on bottom. I've got a Cash Not Credit. I've got a Chicago's Cash that I love, Sierra.
I love Sierra so much.
And I feel like... Oh, I've got a Fury of the Wind in training with Corbin. I've got a Slick by Design. I've got 2 Absolute Vanillas. I love the Absolute Vanillas. If you guys don't know about him, Adam Conrad owned him and stood him. He was in the Ruby Buckle, and he lost him last year, but he's got some babies coming this year by him, so make sure you guys go check those out, because I love my Absolute Vanillas. Now, as far as non-barrel racing horses, I have 2 Frisian fillies that I've got an Imperial Frisian and then a Heritage Frisian. And I just bought another Imperial Frisian that's a little baby. And my French Streak to Vegas had a Johnny Reb Jackson this year. What else? I feel like Mortis is my... I had a barrel horse I made $60,000 on. He won a couple of futurities and set some arena records. And he's retired. He's 18 this year.
A Beaver.
I have Beaver and Sheldon. I have some ranch geldings that we day worked on. That I've kept just because I really respect them, because I kind of used them to tag and brand, and I don't have time to do that anymore, and I hate it. So, Beaver, Sheldon. I have a couple of racehorses that I trained on the track that retired from the racetrack, and I probably could teach them a trade because they're sound, but they're retired at my house. So, I have a lot of horses that are mine personally, and I just try to take really good care of them. They're all fat and don't do much. So that's kind of what I have. I've got a daughter of First Down Dash in training, an own daughter of First Down Dash that's 3, and she's in race training. And we have a 2-year-old named Sir Highest Fire. We really like him. So, I've got some racehorses. So.
Yes.
My goals would this year, I just would like to get a routine down with videoing the horses and get things at the house squared away in the beginning part of the week so that Aspen and I can enter some barrel races and rodeos. I don't really love to barrel race because I'm not a big fan of a lot of the people. I don't like petty catty behavior. I am the person that can cheer for whoever wins because it takes a lot to be a winner, and I know that. Winning doesn't come easy. Winning doesn't come to people that don't put in the work. So I feel like I can clap for anybody, cheer for anybody, be proud of you. I don't care if you made your horse or if you bought it. I think there's beauty in both. I think there's beauty in anybody that can win with a horse. I tell people, you can go buy a 1D horse, but that doesn't mean you can ride it. So if somebody buys a 1D horse for $100,000 and then they can throw a leg over it and win on it, there's beauty in that because that's also rare. And I think if you buy a $100,000 horse and you can't win on it, I think the last thing you need is somebody to mention that because you're already struggling in your own head. You're trying to get out of your own way. And I think that there is beauty in that struggle too because it'll make you a better horseman because eventually you'll make that run that it'll click and then you'll start winning on that horse. But I think that in barrel racing, there's a lot of petty behavior. So I barrel race because I love my horses, not because I love like I don't go there to make friends. I just go there to enjoy my horse. Yep. And then we have Squirt and Quincy and Jasper and several others right now that came through the kill pen that are just ones that we love and enjoy. But my goals basically are to just enjoy my horses and to give them the best life I can and to enjoy my life while I'm young and able. And I know Tinley will want to barrel race, so to just keep solid horses so when she's ready, there's enough, you know, where we can all go and enjoy them. My main goal, I think, is to not raise a mean girl. Yeah. My kid is actually pretty cool in the sense that she likes, like, when we interact with other little kids, my kid kind of likes them, and I'm like, you are not mine, but I love this. Like, I love that you're somebody else's cheerleader. Good girl. So, I think that's another main goal is to just let Tinley live her best life because I can provide that for her.
Question?
What's the best way to stop a foal from nipping?
Next question. I think that foals are big babies, and when they bite, you unfortunately have to smack them on the nose. And I've had some that, like, I smacked on the nose, and then they reared up at me, and they were like, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Where did you first see Jacob Daddy, and was it love at first sight, and how did you know he was in love with you?
Yeah, so I was, I dated a guy for a really long time, and, okay, so first of all, I bought a barrel horse back when I was working for Equiglobe. They had English horses, but we had talked, and they were like, man, there's a lack of knowledge in the barrel racing industry, like, about advertising horses on, this was back in, like, 2001 or two, so I was still, like, a freshman in high school. I bought a horse from a lady named Shelly Hess, and he was super cool, and we ended up getting him, putting weight on him, like really making him look amazing and putting him on barrelhorses.com, which used to be the big deal way back in the day, before Barrel Horse World even, and resold him. And so Shelly and I kind of had always kind of stayed in touch. You met her the other day at the house. But we weren't friends by anybody's standards. Shelly's the one that brought Antidisier back.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So Shelly Hess is her name. So anyway, Shelly, she's always kind of traded horses. I bought that gelding from her. I was not a barrel racer. We just bought him to kind of dabble in that, the reselling aspect of it when I was young. So I've always kind of stayed in touch with her, and one winter I had rodeo cattle. I raised rodeo bulls, bucking bulls, and I was getting out of it, and I had sold a big group of cows to a guy in Oregon, and I made a post on Facebook that said, like, hey, I need somebody to haul, like, 20 cattle across the country for me, and Shelly inboxed me and said, hey, I don't know if you know Jacob Thompson, but I think they have cow trucks. His wife is the one that owned Wrangler when you bought Wrangler. And I messaged back and I said, oh, I remember that girl. I thought she was super young. And she said, well, she was when you bought Wrangler, but like laugh out loud, you know, she's like 23 now or something. And I was like, all right. So I messaged Jacob on Facebook because I don't have their phone numbers and she didn't have their numbers on hand. And I just really politely, I was like, hi, I know your wife. I'm sorry to bother you. I just need some your wife and I have a mutual friend. I'm sorry to bother you, but I need some cattle like hauled. And I was told that you have a cattle hauling business. And he messaged back and said, I'm not married. And kind of like real snarky, like, well, one, I'm not married, and two, I don't haul for the public. And I was like, okay, well, I'm really sorry. I guess I have the wrong person. And he messaged back and was like, oh, no, it's me. We got a divorce, and I just don't haul for the public at all. And I said, oh, well, sorry, I didn't know because I don't really know her. I just have a mutual friend, Shelly Hess, and she gave me your information. Is there any way that you can help me find somebody to haul them? And he was like, yeah, I'll look around. So then it just turned into a conversation, and then it turned into like, hey, like, what are you doing Saturday? And then it turned into me driving on Saturday to see this person. And absolutely love at first sight. I came around the corner at Chili's and I was an hour and 10 minutes late to meet him. And there he stood, 6 foot something, big daddy, dimples, big guy. And I was like, oh my God, hello daddy. Like, but it was kind of weird because like Shelly sold me Wrangler when I was still in high school. And Jacob's ex-wife owned that horse when I bought him. And I don't know her hardly at all. I don't really. But I dated a guy for 4 years before Jacob. And his little sister was Ashley's best friend. So I kind of knew who she was, if that makes sense. And I knew, like, that she kind of got married young. And I kind of knew a little bit, but I didn't really know Jacob, and I still don't really know her. But that's how I met Jacob, and the rest, Jacob and I have been together in December for 10 years. So, yeah. So that's a long story, and that's how it actually happened, and it's all Shelly's fault. I blame her.
What is the best medicine and treatment for a pony with heat?
And first I would do an allergy panel with Spectrum, and I would eliminate all of the allergens, and I would start the shots to eliminate the allergies which originally created the heaves. The problem is that once a horse has started heaving, even when you eliminate all of the allergens and you start all the allergy shots, you still have the potential of there being a little bit of heaviness there. So I would have your vet do an allergy panel through Spectrum, eliminate the allergens, start all the allergy shots. I personally love Trihist. I've had great luck with Trihist. Trihist granules are by far the best thing I've found to keep a horse with heaves on. They say that they won't sweat on it, so towards the end of spring all the way through the middle of fall, we feed a can of dark beer twice a day if we have a horse on Trihist. So they get dark beer and the Trihist. That's the very best treatment. Obviously, I keep dexamethasone on hand, 10 cc's of dex twice a day for a day, and then we go to 5 cc's twice a day for 2 days to get ahead of the heaves episode. I'm very, very aggressive if a horse starts to heave. Very, very aggressive. And we keep clenbuterol on hand, which is Ventapulmin. And we'll do 5 cc's early in the morning, see how they handle 5 cc's. If they still have any heave symptoms after 10 cc's of dex and 5 cc's of clenbuterol, we will do 10 more cc's and 5 more cc's that night. Yes, there are people that will tell you that's a very aggressive thing and there are complications you can have with that. But a horse heaving is a horrible, horrible way to live. I've heard people say that that much dex can maybe founder one. I've never had it happen. And I've probably in the last 9 years seen 200 cases of heaves. And I feel like I don't want to ever say I'm an expert on it. I think I learn something new every day. But if we ever have a horse that's heaving, it's 10 cc's of dex first thing in the morning, 5 cc's of clenbuterol. If they were not sweating and the clenbuterol didn't cause major side effects again that night, we will do 10 cc's of dex And I'm talking a solid 12 hours apart, maybe even 14 hours apart, so no closer than that. Another 5 cc's of Inapulmin orally, 10 cc's of Dex IV the next day. From that night, we'll go a solid 12 to 14 hours later, and we'll do like 3 cc's of Inapulmin, 5 cc's of Dex, go another 13, 14 hours, do 5 cc's of Dex, 3 cc's of Inapulmin. By then, we should be ahead of the heaves. It should have subsided. I'll just do about 3 to 5 cc's of Inapulmin in the mouth for 5 additional days. I may have to give maybe 5 cc's of Dex in the muscle in that period of time. My biggest thing is to get the heaves stopped, to get them back on grain, and to get the trihist in them. And you have to be very aggressive when a horse starts to heave. But I do recommend speaking to your vet, because you don't want to give that dosage to a horse that's really poor. I've had some heaves horses that have come in very, very, very poor because they've been heaving a lot, and will do 10 cc's of Dex, 2.5 cc's of Inapulmin. 4 hours later, do 2.5 more cc's of Inapulmin. So you really want to get with your vet on that specific horse because of their health concerns. But if I have a horse that comes in that's pretty fleshy, it's a big horse, I'm very, very aggressive with Dex and Inapulmin. Then we start trihis. But in order to make sure you never have a heaves episode again, you want to get that spectrum allergy panel done, eliminate all the allergens. I will tell you that Jimmy was one of the worst heave horses I've ever seen in my life, and he has had 2 heaves episodes since we did the allergy panel and eliminated all of the allergens, but we were able to stop the heaves like within 30 minutes because there's not a lot of allergen issue also with the heaves. So I was able to give him 10 cc's of Dex, and I'm talking about a horse that when I first got him, it was awful. We did 10 cc's of Dex twice a day for 2 days and Inapulmin, and couldn't even remotely stop the heaving. He was thumping so fucking bad, I thought he was going to have a heart attack. So the allergy panel has almost cured his heaves by eliminating all the allergens. But again, we still have had 2 very minor heave episodes, nothing like he used to have. And they were controlled with just 5 cc's of Dex and 5 cc's of Inapulmin. He stopped within 30 minutes. And the next morning, he was fine and continued to be fine. And then we had one really super hot, weird day, and he was outside. And he had gotten kind of into the round bell, which had some dust. And he had a little heavy moment. Just because that horse has a lot of scar tissue from having heaves and problems for so long, that even though if we could have got the horse 10 years ago or 5 years ago, we probably could have just done the allergy panel and completely eliminated the heaves altogether. But because he heaved for so long, he's got a lot of scar tissue, so you're going to have some relapse type issues. But we can almost stop his heaves in their track instantaneous with very minimal drugs. So that's what's great, is if you do the spectrum, eliminate all the allergies. If your horse has a little heavy episode, the medications work so much better in such smaller doses, and the horse's quality of life is just so much better. Okay, next.
How do you deal with so many horses?
I was born for this. Mm-hmm. My dad had 80 racehorses in training my entire life as a child. I could tell you all their name, what they ate, what supplements they were on. So those parts of my brain were just developed young and trained young and exercised young. And now that I'm older, it's just that part of my brain, whatever that is, was just trained at a young age. And it was such a blessing, because I don't know if I could do this at the number and volume that we do had I not kind of always done this. But I think that's just the racehorse trainer in me. I can handle large, large numbers of horses and remember every detail. I still remember horses from the very first set that we advertised in my front yard. I remember and little details about them. So I was just born for this.
Are there any specific things I need to do when my horse comes home to ease the transition?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great question. Probably the best question of the day. One thing that I tell people is if I were a customer and I was buying a horse from me, I would want to set myself up for success from the word go. So things that I would want to do from the get-go one, when my horse arrives, I would want to probably have some CBD treats on hand, or just some good treats to kind of teach that horse that I am a food lady. I am, and I'm talking about for those of you that are non-competitive homes, that you're just really trying to build a bond. I like the CBD cookies because I think they give the horse a really relaxed demeanor, and they teach that horse that interactions with you are going to be really quiet. I also treat every horse that I buy to keep with OE the solution in their grain, and it is for ulcers, and I do the 21-day gut treatment. These horses have been through a lot. So I would have OE the solution on hand to start to treat their gut. I would buy a bag of CBD cookies. They're 60, so you have 2 months worth there. You just give one cookie a day. It's not, and I like that. I like to feed hemp instead of, like, I don't like the oils in the mouth or anything like that, because I think if you're going at them with a syringe in the face, you don't know what they've been through. So I like the fact it's a cookie, so it's like some, it's like a treat, and it's also a good supplement. It's going to help to stimulate their appetite. Anyway, long story short, CBD cookies, OE the solution to help with their stomach. I think it's important for the first week or so that your horse is there. I have a 9-day policy. For the first 9 days, I just want to build the best bond that I can with my horse without adding any stress to their life. They've been on OE the solution for 9 days. They've had 9 days worth of cookies with me. Just brush them, pick out their feet. Just do everything you can to bond with that horse. And that is the biggest thing that you can do to genuinely set yourself up to succeed. Then when you fast forward from there, I feel like adding OE Align when you're done with the solution kind of will keep that stomach's good gut health. Obviously, I do like the cookies, but my biggest thing is just to make sure when your horse shows up that you're doing things to make them feel better. Their stomach might be a little upset from all of the transition, all the stress, so the OE, the solution, is a huge deal. Aspen can order that for you. Because I think horses get ulcers in all of this transition, and when you go to saddle them, they're like a little bit cinchy, or they back their ears when you saddle them, and a lot of times that's ulcers. So ulcer prevention, hemp cookies, it's great for their stomach. It kind of helps to stimulate their appetite. It helps them to have like a good quiet demeanor. Another thing that I do is a lot of times I'll burn a little Palo Santo around a horse to invite positive energy in, to kind of increase that positive bonding experience. I love Palo Santo, and I'll do a little sage. I like ethically sourced Apache sage that is brought to you from, you know, like a shaman, and you can do a little sage to kind of clear the negative energy, just to help kind of create a good solid bond between you and the horse that are built on very positive vibration, positive energy. So those are just some things I do. OE the solution, the CBD cookies, and just really trying to keep the energy between you and the horse positive, and give them plenty of time to settle in and let their stomach kind of relax. Give them 9 days on the solution before you really ride them or do a whole lot. So the first time you saddle them, if they're ulcery, you'll have time to have treated that and got it out of the way. So that's what I do. Because if you buy a horse from me, they probably already have their teeth done, already have their feet done, and already been wormed. Now, if you don't buy a horse from me, you want to make sure you get their feet trimmed, get their teeth floated. I tell everyone, I also have the osteopath work on all of my horses that I purchase before I ever ride them. So I work on osteopathy, teeth, feet, get the ulcers taken care of, introduce the CBD cookies, kind of clear the energy, and then I'll start riding them. But I do all of those things before I ride horses that I buy that I'm going to keep.
On average, how many horses do you end up cataloging that you get in?
I don't know what that means. Like cataloging to catalog sales? Yes. 200 a year. But then from the house, we sell 50 a week. And there's 50 horses a week times 52 weeks. So from the house, we're selling 2,600 horses from the house, plus probably 2 to 250 horses through catalogs. So we're doing we do about 3,000 horses a year to the public, and we probably do another 3,000 to 4,000 horses a year to slaughter.
Will you and Jacob ever get married?
So the reason Jacob and I are not married is because of me. Jacob has basically done all the things to try to get me to marry him. which is fine. I just feel like when Tinley's a little older and we kind of have our life settled, I'd like to have a big wedding with all of my people. And Jacob just wants to go to the courthouse. And I told him, like, I'm not marrying you at the courthouse. I deserve a big wedding with a big dress and a big everything. And, you know, I mean, Jacob has tried to buy me engagement rings. And he looks at rings that are like 4.5, 5 carats. They're gigantic. They're, you know, $30,000. And I'm like, you know, we need that $30,000 for a lot of things that is not... Oops. Oh, sorry. We need that $30,000 somewhere other than my finger. So it's kind of been that kind of stuff. It's not because it's, I mean, one, I don't want a big, big ring and we're good. Thank you. So that's, sorry, we're pulling into the racetrack. So that's why. And I don't know how to explain that because people ask that all the time. And there's not, like, a reason. Nothing's happened, you know, like, I don't know. Is that a good answer? Is that adequate answer? Like,
remember this.
So speed up?
No. We're going to jump your car if we do that.
Okay, so slow way down.
Yes.
Oh, I forgot to get gas in law as well.
Yeah, I looked at that earlier.
Yep.
She just called you ugly. Tara, is your favorite color purple?
Absolutely. Actually, honestly, my favorite color is gray. I like gray. Gray is my favorite color. Still, gray is my favorite color. But it's, for some reason, people associate it with, like, dark and gloomy, and I don't understand why. So my second favorite color is purple, and then red. Still gray. Like a very vibrant purple, and then red. And I like a blue-based, like, ruby woo kind of red. What else?
Will you explain what the initials on conditions of horses when you do videos?
What? Will you explain what the initials on conditions of horses... No, I can't explain. That's not really something you can explain. I don't do videos and say, I think this horse has something, because I'm not a veterinarian. So, EPM is, man, having to walk in the pouring rain. I'm out.
They're running races today, aren't they?
They are running races. Yeah, that's where they're headed to the paddock. But, EPM stands for equine protozoal mitochondrial or some stupid shit. I don't know. It's basically a protozoa that gets into the horse's muscle, and it can even get into their spine. But that is a condition that a vet has to diagnose. And but when I do videos of horses, that's not something that I would be like, this one's EPM.
Yeah.
That's not. Okay, so my dad's barn is over here. Man, I feel like I'm the worst person with directions in the world. Are they over here? Did they beat us here? Or did we beat them here?
Didn't they say they were going to the house?
I know my dad better than that. I go, I know my dad better than that. He said he was going to the house.
Yeah, his truck's up here too.
Told ya. Yep. Where's my mama's truck? Yeah. All right, you guys. Well, I'm going to cut this podcast a little short, and we'll finish up with the question and answers in a part 2. Bye, you guys.